The Financial Survival Network, helping you survive and thrive in the new economy. Go to carrielutz.com and sign up for 30 free micro trainings on financial survival.
1490 WGCH. This is Kerry Lutz. You're listening to the Financial Survival Network. And we have a new guest, Andrew Horowitz of thedisciplinedinvestor.com. He's an investing guru, got one of the hottest podcasts on iTunes, and he's with us today. Hello, Andrew.
Hey, Kerry, how are you?
I'm doing good. I've got all these New Year's resolutions that I haven't broken yet, and it's the fifth.
Congratulations.
Yeah, and one of them is like not to get scammed by these phony investment people out there who are just part of the big boys club, you know?
Yeah, you know, listen, at the end of the day, I always encourage people to get educated, and that's kind of part of the game. You know, the one thing that you don't want to get involved in is tips, right? So you hear, they said this is going to be great, or that's going to be great, or, you know, you hear something and it sounds great, so you just run into it. And I think that the game has changed a little bit over the last few years, and it's definitely slanted towards a different player. And frankly, and I tell everybody this on my podcast, in my writings, even the players themselves have disadvantages these days, you know, because governments are involved. When you have the Chinese government, involved in a sovereign wealth fund with $200, $300, $500 billion just moving in and out of markets, and the Japanese government throwing around all sorts of money for the use of trying to prop up the yen, and you see the dollar being trashed and the euro. I mean, you know, there's just an onslaught of areas, or let's just say potholes, or even I should say landmines in this current environment.
Yeah, anti-tank, anti-personnel, financial landmines just waiting to blow up on you, and people are very scared after the MF Global thing. I think, you know, it wasn't a lot of money in the scheme of things, although the derivatives, it's kind of like, it's not the initial explosion, it's the secondary explosion that blows up the ammo dump and the whole, the whole arsenal. That's really what it comes down to. And the secondary explosion there was an undermining in confidence and faith that people actually have securities that are represented on their statement, and that they're liquid. And how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we call the collateral damage of something there. But, you know, there's a lot of that going on right now. And that's just an example that we see that is apparent. And there's a question that comes up. And this is more, you know, MF Global was more of a futures style trading. You know, when I say futures, commodities and such. But, you know, you see a lot of this happening. And I think the reason this is happening is because there is a top-down a process that's going on where the leaders of countries around the world are taking extraordinary amounts of liberties to protect themselves. For example, one of the things that has bothered me greatly, and it's really something that people have not, I think, looked into because it doesn't affect them, is that when the recent haircuts in Greece took place, where the Greek government said, hey, listen, you know, banks, you're gonna have to take about, 50% of a reduction in the value of your bonds. And they were forcibly, you know, it was forced upon them. And what happened was that in most cases, when you're forced to do something like that due to a default, you will then be paid by the insurance if you have any.
Right.
And in this case, it was the CDS that they bought. Well, they structured in such a way that there was no CDS monies that were paid out, because they structured so that wasn't a default. Now, here you are thinking that you have all this coverage, and then this happens. The second thing is that you have bond auctions around the world. Now, Kerry, if there's something risky out there that you were asked to buy and you knew you could buy insurance to cover yourself, that's great. But all of a sudden, you realize that that insurance isn't worth the paper that it's written on. What do you do now?
Yeah, what you do now is you look for total safety, and you don't believe anybody's guarantees. So you probably pile into government bonds figuring, well, those are relatively safe, or U.S. bonds, I guess, until that implodes, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have two choices. You know, you have the choice of, you know, kind of bundling up and going undercover, underground, if you will, and, you know, then going out and trying to find a way to, you know, get hard assets and, you know, be very, very secure, assuming that you could do so. Or in a way, unfortunately, you know, assume that, okay, if we all go down, we're going down together. I know this is kind of a little bit cold, but, you know, going down, and you know what, if it's going to happen, it's going to happen. I can only do my best here. And, you know, I know that sounds ridiculous, but you have to have a little bit of a leap of faith somewhere, you know, with some of this in order to possibly prosper in the future. Because, you know, we could probably find a lot of reasons over time, both of us, almost at any time in the past, that was a really problematic environment to be involved in anything with our money.
Mm-hmm.
We can probably identify times all the time. You know, when was it really a good time?
Well, the good times were about 4 years ago, so they seemed, when, or go back to pre-9/11, pre-dot-com bust, where everything looked like we were living in the best of all possible worlds. And I think it kind of points up that old thing, in times of war, prepare for peace. In times of peace, prepare for war.
Right.
And I guess you need to be diversified, have, if you're going to hold stocks, probably avoid the bond market, because those yields aren't compensating you for the actual loss of purchasing power due to inflation. So you're probably going to look for securities, like we were talking about before, like master limited partnerships. Really,
yeah, I mean, but Gary, you know what? TLT, which is the, this is a fund, an ETF of long-dated treasuries, was up somewhere, 25% last year. Mm-hmm. Now, you didn't get any yield on it, but you made 25%, and I'm sure that however you and I are going to calculate inflation, it was less than that.
Right. You know, if you go by the worst possible calculation, John Williams, shadowstats.com,
it
was at 13, so you had a 12% real return.
Right.
It makes a lot of sense, but the upside's probably been realized on that. And that you got to be looking at if interest rates go up, how do we protect ourselves? Although I don't see the government allowing that, because they can't afford.
Exactly.
We're paying interest on interest already. So if rates go up to 6-7% like they are in Italy, it becomes a national disaster. It becomes an existential threat to the government. So they can't allow it, can they?
No, I mean, hey, John, if I, Carrie, if I give you a, if I give you if I give you a credit card,
mm-hmm.
and I tell you that you are in charge of the interest rate on it,
mm-hmm.
the probability is that you're going to keep it low. Right?
I like the interest-free period forever. Okay. You know,
right.
I kind of like that.
That's what the government's doing. That's what they're doing. The government is basically regulating their own interest rates, and they are pushing it down in a way, and they have the ability to do that. They don't have the ability to do that in Europe for a lot of different reasons, and that's why they're suffering. But I think the world that we're living in right now is in it's a two-part process that got us here. It's a world living in second chances and in denial. So, for example, you know, we had a situation a number of years ago, just, you know, whatever, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, that we were first in denial that anything can go wrong, right? I can eat all the candy I want. I'm not going to get cavities and not get fat. no ramifications. But then all of a sudden,
what a great world that would be.
Yeah. Right. And then all of a sudden, the banks imploded, and you know, everybody said, "Wait a minute, I didn't know that housing prices could go down." And you know, you're sitting in a situation that you're scratching your head, wondering what's going on. Now, from there, what happens is that we get to basically a near death experience. We saw the light, right?
Yeah.
And we have this near death experience, and there we are saying, "Okay, now what?" And we came out of it, whether we like the way we did or not, but we came out of it, and you know, not everybody, but you know, some people came out of it, and you know, relatively unscathed, at least, you know, beaten up a bit, but still have themselves intact. And wouldn't you know it, bingo, next thing you know, here we are in a world like, well, you know what, if we went through the worst, who cares?
Yeah, that's the if, though. You know, the thing is, if you accept the premise that it's brought on by excessive debt, inability to service it. What have we done in the past 4 years? All we've done is like quadruple the amount of debt outstanding to try to service the existing debt. How long is that sustainable before you have a currency collapse, economic collapse, or both? That's really the question.
I don't think anybody cares.
until it happens.
I mean, I'm telling you. Yeah, they don't care until it happens. Don't talk to me about it until it happens, you know?
Right, and then we get to, like, the federal government making meaningful budgetary reform, because 43 cents of every federal dollar that's spent is borrowed, and some of it is actually borrowed from creditors, but the bulk of it is printed up by helicopter Ben Bernanke of the Federal Reserve. How long can that go on?
I don't know. I'll ask you the same question, and I'm not trying to be argumentative, nor am I trying to prove anything, but I just want to ask you something. You know, until I feel it personally, until my taxes go up to a point that I can't pay it, until I am not able to go to the movies, to go to dinner, I don't care. Not me. I'm not saying me. I mean the bigger me,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, the collective.
I don't care.
The collective.
Yeah. So
me.
You know, don't talk to. I mean, it's like, don't talk to me about it until, you know, it's the monster's on my doorstep.
Well, that's kind of like Steve Jobs. You know, he went for a scan. He had a shadow on his pancreas. He could have gone for surgery right away, and he probably would have been okay, or it would have slowed it down so much he would have lived for another 10 years.
Right.
But instead, he says, well, you know what? I think I'll go eat tofu. And that's what we're doing. We're eating the tofu and not facing up to the economic reality, hoping that the old Latin thing, due machina, the hand of God will come in and save us at the end and prevent us from total ruin. And
well, the hand of God seems to come in all the time, doesn't it? I'm seriously.
Yeah, well, it has a number of times, but that's the old kicking the can down the road, and eventually you get to the abyss. I mean, really, what made the world prosper, and I think that we've gotten away from this, that people don't understand it, they don't teach it in school, is creation of true wealth begins with excess production, savings, using that savings to invest, which allows people to create products and services and whatever that actually add value, that create wealth. Because if it was just simple enough to print up Federal Reserve notes and we'd all be richer, we'd never have a problem, would we?
Nope. I agree. But, you know, right now we're in an election cycle, and the powers that be care more about their longevity in Congress or in the White House or wherever it may be than they do about the long-term, you know, problems that will be created. And somehow, except in certain areas, somehow this feeling that there will be no negative ramifications because, you know, we're closing our eyes to it, has spread around the world for most countries, not every country, but it's spread around the world. It's like there was a big meeting one day and said, you know what, guys, listen, just keep on pouring everything you got into it forever, and eventually, you know, eventually it'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really true, and it's disheartening because it can't have a happy ending. We just have to look at history. These things happen over and over again, and the other thing is when the government keeps these interest rates super low or non-existent, it encourages malinvestment, means you get housing bubbles, you get internet bubbles, because bubbles are going to occur whether the government's printing money or not. But the problem is that when they're printing unlimited amounts of money, you can have multiple bubbles, which is a relatively new phenomena in economies, because usually, you know, you had tulips. All right. So the Dutch went crazy over tulips. It blew up and they went broke. And then you had France. They had the Louisiana land purchase thing that blew up. And then you had England. They had the South Sea bubble and that blew up. But you didn't have like real estate, technology, stock market, bonds, all, and currencies all blowing up at close to each other.
Right.
That's what's so interesting about the whole thing, is that we've never been in this situation before with, you know, fiat currencies.
Let me ask you something, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think what's happening is that, have you ever fallen off a 20-story building?
No, I hopefully never have that opportunity, although I was in Disney World one time at the Tower of Terror, and it felt like I fell off one.
but I think we both agree that it probably hurts really bad.
Oh, yeah.
You know, assuming that we survive, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure if we sat next to somebody who told us how bad it hurts, we'll be like, because they did it, we'd be like, right? But we wouldn't have that experience. We wouldn't have that ability to really understand what was going on. Well, you know, that's where we are today. I think that most of us have not lived through a very hard time. In the 70s, there was some very bad recessionary times. There was, you know, also obviously in the recession back in the 30s. And, you know, we really haven't had it where we were like, wait a minute. You know, for a long time, there is no rescue plan. There is no plan B. There is no way to get out of this. And markets don't pop up a year and a half later. It's an elongated misery affair. So I think that's some of the things that have gone on and have trained us, for good or for bad, by the way, to, you know, kind of ignore some of this. You got to admit, though, there's something to be said about how, again, good or bad, you know, the consumer has held up pretty well. Amazingly, in the face of a lot of things, consumer sentiment has held up pretty well. And you and I can go through whether or not it's all rigged and all that. And, you know, you got to believe something somewhere. So I got to start with that. And at the same time, you know, when you look around and you look at the money that's poured in, it's clearly disproportional to the amount of result we've gotten for the various stimulus and all. But, you know, for right now, until the thing blows up, unfortunately, it's something that is going to, they're gonna stretch out for a very long time until there's just no more time anymore. And as you say, kick the can down the road, it's like they're punting it.
Oh, yeah. That's for sure. I mean, it reminds me of that movie Breaker Morant, when the guy was going to the gallows and he said, live every day as if it would be your last, for one day you're sure to be right. And that day, you know, that day of reckoning is out there. No one wants to think about it. But if you've got money now, how do you invest it, Andrew? What's the best?
Well, I think, yeah, that's a good option. Question. I mean, you know, stark reality is that commodities are an interesting player right now. You look at food commodities, you mentioned some oil issues with the MLPs. You know, I mean, there's a lot of geopolitical problems and you know, landmines you got to deal with when it comes to that. But I will say there really is a consumption issue with that. You just talk about 25% of the people in the world and, you know, 1.3 living in Asia, particularly in India and China. You look at China with 1.3 billion people that, you know, like to drive around in cars and are looking to, you know, move to the next level. This is I think I don't want to say the future, but this is something we need to really look at. You have food issues, I think, health issues. You know, we have a real need for healthcare domestically here in the United States, as we have an aging population. And around the world, you have a diabetes epidemic happening in India. There's many companies that provide various services, whether it's the drugs or whether it's the dialysis or surgical equipment. So I think those are very important. And I think you still look at some of the leaders that have been really good at, you know, keeping their overall, you know, costs down, you know, have a good brand, so that these are the things that people will gravitate to in all sorts of times. And, you know, some of the retailers, you know, you got to look at. But at the same time, you have to look at the way that this market works is that, you know, you have to look at some of the areas like, you know, what's been the beaten down the most and kind of rotate in and out of that.
Right. It makes a lot of sense. And you can't get married to stocks. You can't do this buy and hold thing forever and hope that everything's going to turn out. For people who get like a double or a triple in a stock, God bless them, because it hasn't happened to me enough. What do you recommend they do when they see a huge run up in a stock that they've held, you know, for a period of time and it's gone up? How do you advise them to protect their profits? Because that's a
there's a couple of things you can do. There's a couple of things. First of all, you know, along the way in making that money, I'm going to have to assume that there was some pretty bumpy, you know, points of time. You know, it wasn't always just straight up. So when we look at the fact that they made, I don't know, 150, 200% on a stock, I'm going to have to also say that, you know, there were times that you were down 10% or whatever the number is, but you had some faith and belief in all that. If the structure, if the overall, if nothing has changed with the position in terms of the company, if nothing is going on that's different at all, I mean, you know, you look at something like a sell stop or maybe writing some calls against it or you know, putting buying some puts in case things just drop out. You know, you could do things like that. But I think that the overall discussion has to be, you know, what is this stock all about? Is it still the same company? Is it still a quality organization? You know, does it still offer me the same opportunity? And, you know, then you got to just track it over time and see if nothing has materially changed. That's the biggest issue.
Right. So you need to always be reevaluating your portfolio then Over what time period? How often do you do that?
I mean, I think it's reasonable to say that, you know, looking at it for significant changes, depending on, you know, your level of interaction with your investments. You know, you look at something like, you know, every quarter to see, okay, where are things? At least, you know, take a look at where are things from an asset allocation standpoint as an individual, if you're doing a broad-based type of investment. And then obviously, more regularly, if you have individual securities that you're looking at and you're investing in, because those could change rather quickly and just, you know, overnight, frankly, you could just get, you know, the bottoms drop out of some of those.
Oh, sure. So it's like always be checking, basically. You got to be.
Yeah, but don't do it. Don't nudge it. Don't nudge the portfolio.
Right. You can't do it constantly.
And you know, if there's something that you have, you know, we're pretty active involved in the portfolios, and, you know, that's good and bad. You know, sometimes it's excellent because you're going to be in the right place, you know, and you're going to be able to stop something from either bleeding or add on to something that's really growing. On the other hand, there are times when that doesn't work as well because you maybe have certain stop loss and limitations in there when you should have let, you know, the thing alone. So they kind of, you know, both ways.
Right. Well, one thing I found effective recently, you know, I made a killing in a lot of mining, junior mining stocks. Uh-huh. And some of them went up like more than I ever had any stock go up. But what I did was when the thing doubled or tripled, I sold off half of it, held mm-hmm. on to the rest. And I said, now it's, you know, it's free ride. Actually, I've got a profit locked in. So Let's see what happens. And that one, you know, taking some profits, taking your money off the table, something I never did before, and as a result I got killed during the dot-coms. You know, it's not a bad thing to do once in a while.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing. The one thing you have to always remember is it's okay to get back in sometime in the future.
Right.
Even if it runs away from you in the other direction.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you took some money off because whatever the reason was, and then you wanted to move back into it over time, you know, you can't be afraid to do so.
Yeah, totally agree. So we're just about up, Andrew. Tell us where we find you, and if you take emails, where they send it to.
Yeah, just go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. You can also just look up my name, Andrew Horowitz, on the web. You'll find me all over there. And at the same time, you could, of course, subscribe on iTunes. We have three different podcasts, The DH Unplugged, The Winning Investor, and thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and books and all that good stuff. And just if you want to contact me on the website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com, plenty of ways to contact me.
All right, excellent. And we will throw a link up on carrylutz.com so people can get right to your site.
Hey, Kerry, thanks so much. You're the best. Great show.
Hey, great to have you on. We'll definitely have you on again, probably towards the end of the first quarter, so we can kind of do a little post-mortem.
Terrific.